but encourage you to take your Bibles out and turn to Psalm chapter 19, and we'll be reading verses 1 through 6. Psalm chapter 19, verses 1 through 6. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. In the heavens, God has pitched a tent for the sun. It is like a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, like a champion rejoicing to run his course. It rises at one end of the heavens and makes its circuit to the other. Nothing is deprived of its warmth.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us today. Many of you will instantly recognize these words. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. There are no countries. It isn't hard to do, nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. 1971, John Lennon wrote those words. Nothing but sky above us. There's no God. There's no heaven. There's no hell. Imagine, wouldn't that just be a perfect world? Or would that be hell on earth? The Bible, in a sense, doesn't argue God's existence. But from the very beginning, it speaks it. In the beginning, God spoke our worlds into existence. And in the passage that Josh read in Psalm 19, it is giving continual testimony to God's glory. The heavens are telling of his glory. The expanse is declaring his work. It's doing this constantly, day to day, night to night. And yet the universe, which constantly pours forth testimony to the glory of its maker, to the awesomeness of its creator, is absolutely silent. There's no speech. There are no words. There's no voice. And yet it speaks in a language that is universal. In verse 4, their line has gone out through all the earth, and their utterances to the end of the world. all people who look up and see the heavens, see them speak in a language that they understand the glory of their Creator. Despite fierce debates, despite efforts to suppress it, even some who do not believe will acknowledge that man seems hardwired to believe in God. But imagine there is no God. What would be the consequences of this? What would be the consequences of the fact there is no God? One consequence would be there would be no explanation for life. Why is there something? All of us agree. If you disagree with this, please raise your hand. I'm assuming this. All of us agree we are here right now. Okay? Everybody agrees that. There's something. There's not nothing. We are alive. We can understand these words. How did that happen? How did that happen? Has matter just always been here? Or did it have a beginning at a certain place, at a certain time? Others could articulate it much better than I can. But the Big Bang Theory was sometimes opposed originally by scientists, because you know what it demands. It demands that there was a beginning in the universe. It demands there was a point at which everything started. The Bible had told us that from the beginning. The Bible had said, in the beginning there was God, and it speaks of God's creation of the heavens and the earth. The Bible had already said it. But some scientists finally got there in 1960 with the idea of the Big Bang. Robert Jastrow, who is an agnostic, stated that this story ends like a bad dream. He is also a physicist. And he stated that what happened is that those who were looking to the power of reason were finally able to climb to the highest peak and find that, yes, there was a beginning of all things. And when they climbed the highest peak, they were greeted by a band of theologians who had been sitting there all the time, who had been saying, yes, the universe had a beginning. The universe had a beginning. Who started it? Stephen Hawking, in his book Grand Design, stated, because there is such a law as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Is that reasonable? First of all, is that statement reasonable? Now think about it just a moment. Because there is such a law as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. If you have the law of gravity, you have something. Not nothing. You have something. Who put the law of gravity into effect. Now, you could also ask the question, does that automatically give things the ability to create themselves? We understand the law of cause and effect. And the law of cause and effect is, if you go to the door and there's a note there, someone left it there. If the phone is ringing, someone on the other side is calling you. We understand that. And when we talk about things like our planet, our universe, and the world around us, is it logical to think that this did not come into being for some purpose? That there wasn't someone that was greater than what he made who spoke it into existence? If we understand that a computer must have a maker, that it does not create itself, can we not understand that about our creation? As we sang the song just a moment ago, Josh led us in, How Great Thou Art, about wandering through the forest and the trees and seeing the various types of life. We hear the birds. We feel the gentle breeze. When you see that, when you see, you go outside and you see the variety of life, and you see different creatures, all who live in different ways and have different habitats, that should impress our mind as far as the awesomeness of the Creator. And there's so many things that in our world have to be just right. Just right. For life to exist. And if they were altered by sometimes the tiniest bit, it would make life impossible. There are at least 15 things like that that must be constant and precise for life to exist. And it's just an accident that all of those happen. One writer used this illustration. Envision yourself in the Old West, and you are watching a group of people play poker. This is not a pro-poker statement, but you're watching this. And the person who is the dealer, who is also in the game, just happens to deal himself four aces 15 times in a row. Are the people in the game going to suspect him of cheating? Or they're going to say it just all happens by chance? All these factors that are absolutely necessary for life to exist, they all have to just merge on this planet. And all of this is by accident. None of this by design. Can we really believe that that is true? There is no explanation for how life began if we don't believe in God. Not only is there no explanation for life, there's no standard to live by. Now, I want to say here I am not accusing all people who deny the existence of God of being deeply immoral. Some of them may be moral because they're created in God's image in Genesis 1, verses 26 through 28. And the Bible talks about those doing by nature the things that are in law in Romans 2, verses 14 and 15. I don't know all it means to be created in God's image, in God's likeness, but I think our conscience provides us certain roadblocks to bad behavior, even in those who seek to deny the existence of God Himself. So I'm not saying that necessarily all are immoral, but I am saying there is no logical basis, there is no foundation on which to argue and define right from wrong. Several years ago, I was in a meeting in a small town, a small southern town, and they have a large university there. And one of the students was dismayed and said that on the first day of class that the teacher had stated, and this is an engineering class. And the first day of class, the teacher said, there is nothing that's right, there's nothing that's wrong. There's no absolute morality. Now, if I was in that class and that teacher ever dared to mark an answer I gave on a test wrong, I'd sure remind him of that statement. You see, sometimes we say it, but nobody lives that consistently. But I want you to think about how serious this is. I thought about speaking this generically, but I thought maybe if I give the name and the place, it might have more of an impact. I heard F. Legard Smith, who was teaching law at Pepperdine, in the 1990s, give an interview. And he stated that on the first day of class, he would ask the class what was wrong with the Nazis killing Jews in World War II. The most common answer he got 30 years ago at Pepperdine was nothing. We can't say that's wrong. We can't impose our morality on anyone else. A teacher at Yale Law School, Arthur Allen Leff, who argued there's no absolute morality, he said, who among us ought to be able to declare law that ought to be obeyed? Either God exists or he does not. But if he does not, nothing and no one can take his place. There is no standard to live by. There's nothing that we can say is absolutely right or wrong. If there is no God, everything is permissible. Now, some have found great freedom in this. In Bertrand Russell, Why I Am Not a Christian, he said the worst thing about Christianity is its sexual ethic. Yes, the Bible does teach a sexual ethic. It teaches that sex is reserved for marriage. If you take that fire out of the fireplace and you put it in the middle of the living room, it's going to bring destruction and not warmth and healing. Yes, the Bible has a sexual ethic that it doesn't say that sex is bad, but sex is reserved for a husband and a wife, a man and a woman who are married within the intimacy of marriage. Sexual relations outside of marriage, sexual relations between a partner who is married or people who are married to each other, married to different people and have sexual relations with each other is wrong. Sexual relationships between men and men are wrong, and women and women are wrong. But some have found if we get rid of God, we have no standards, and that's liberating. Bertrand Russell among them. Christopher Hitchens, the same kind of thing. But at the same time, if you get rid of God, how can you say anything is wrong? As Timothy Keller said he would do on the streets of New York, he would just get involved in conversations with people and ask, what's something you really believe is wrong? And then ask them to prove it. Without reference to God. He said, well, everybody just knows it's wrong. And he said, no, everybody doesn't just know this is wrong. The same things you're saying are wrong are accepted in many parts of the world. I want to tell you, they're hard questions to answer for believers. If God is loving, if God is all-powerful, if God is good, if God spoke our world into existence, why is there such evil? Why is there evil sometimes on such massive scales? Why? Those are hard questions to answer. But I won't tell you. If you eliminate God, it's hard to explain why they're wrong at all. And I've had conversations like that, and you've probably had conversations like that. One man, a professor and a writer, explained his journey from atheism to believing in God and the Bible and Christianity. And he said, I was an atheist. I was in a lot of ways, I wasn't proclaiming my faith everywhere, but if somebody dared trespass it, I stood up. I spoke loudly about believing there's no God and was kind of obnoxious in some cases about it. And he said, I said there's no right and wrong because he said, I understood that if there is no ultimate arbitrator of right and wrong, arbiter of right and wrong, there is no absolute standard. And he said, I went to South America and I visited a prison and I saw a prisoner treated in a way that was so brutal, that was so ruthless and beaten so intensely that everything within me screamed out, this is wrong. It's wrong. And he said, that was my first step. My first step from going to be an atheist to a believer that Christ had come in the flesh. How many of you remember how Salman Rushdie was famous to begin with? Anybody remember that name and remember why he's famous? If you want to ask about it, I know the younger people aren't. But I heard him in an interview on June 23rd of 2006. I actually did not realize until this interview that he was an atheist. But he was asked the question about morality. How do you have any moral standard without God? How do you have that? And he said, and I'm not making this up, he was defending the idea that yes, there's a moral standard without God. He said, we are created, and he paused. There's a several second pause, and he says, we're hardwired with a sense of morality. But if you're hardwired, or if you're created, who hardwired? Who created it? And just for the record, it is not true. It is factually not true that most of the wars in the world or most of the killings have happened because of religion. It has been, whether it be Mao in China or Stalin in Russia, it has been a purge of religion that has led to the greatest killings in civilization. There's no explanation for how life began. There's no standard to live by. And there's no purpose to live for. Belief in God gives us a purpose. We just sang that. Be thou my vision. Be thou my vision. Belief in God gives a purpose. Paul said, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. But if you ultimately eliminate God, there is no ultimate purpose for which to live. We all know there is a purpose in life. We know there's something of infinite significance. And you know how I know that? Because of how we respond to certain events and situations. It is, as far as I can tell, universally lamented when you see a teenager commit suicide. But the fact that everybody talks about that as a disaster shows us there is something to live for. There's a purpose in life. There's something of value. And I have a couple of quotes from people denying any purpose if there is no God. Some who came to that very reluctantly but had to acknowledge that. But one writer stated that she had lived in New York and written in New York for many years. And she said, I knew people who were working their way up whether selling tickets in a movie theater or waiting or working as at a restaurant as a waitress or a waiter. He said, I knew people before they were famous. And she stated, when they became successful, every one of them became more angry, more unhappy, and more unstable than they were before. That was a secular person's observation, not a Christian's observation. A secular person's observation that if your life is built on the wrong purpose, it will not bring fulfillment. The book of Ecclesiastes, its argument is not that if you devote your life to wisdom, if you devote your life to pleasure, if you devote your life to money or fame, the argument of Ecclesiastes is not that you're going to end up and die lost forever. That's not the argument. The argument of Ecclesiastes is if you build your life on wisdom, on money, on pleasure, on fame, that it will leave you broken and empty, unsatisfied, unfulfilled. As Augustine said, you have created us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. There is no purpose to live for, and there is no hope of life beyond this one. A horrible event. 2007. Shooting on the Virginia Tech campus. As one writer says, what was remarkable is that after that, atheism was nowhere to be found on campus. The speeches were full of Christian language and Christian symbols, because in moments of distress, we all cling to hope. We've seen that recently here. Back in 2021, they had a 20th anniversary ceremony of the victims of 9/11, and they read all the names of those who were killed. I didn't watch all of it. I watched short portions. I was surprised how moved I was by that. And I was surprised how many of them talked about their victims, the victims of 9/11, as if they were alive. One man said he wrote, "Where is atheism when bad things happen?" and mentioned those things. He said, "I got a lot of angry emails And I got a lot of people saying, you're exploiting a tragedy. And he said, but you know what I didn't get? I didn't get one email telling me I was wrong. Matter of fact, he said, one atheist says, oh, you just want to comfort them with untruths. And what we're doing is facing the hard truth that there is no hope in situations like that. More could be said, and much could have been said better. In 1971, when we started this sermon by mentioning in 1971 a song that John Lennon wrote. Here is a note that John Lennon wrote to Oral Roberts, television evangelist, at the end of 1972 or the beginning of 1973. This appears in Ed Harrell's book about the life of Oral Roberts. Some of the things not included in what I'm going to read, there was a relative of Lennon's who had connections with Oral Roberts and worked with him and knew that he had already been praying for Lennon and the Beatles. But Lennon wrote this: I've been wanting to write to you, but I guess I don't really want to face reality. I never do this, never face reality. That's why I take drugs. Reality frightens me and makes me paranoid. It's true, I have a lot of money, and being a Beatle, I've been around the world, but basically, I'm afraid to face the problems of life. Let me begin to say, I regret that I said that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. I don't even like myself anymore because of the guilt. My own father, I hate with a passion because he left my mom and me and came to me after the song A Hard Day's Night and asked for money. It made me so mad. Paul had to hold me down. I was going to kill him. I was under the influence of pills at the time. As the song we wrote, money can't buy me love. It's true. Point is this: I want happiness. I don't want to keep up with drugs. Paul told me once, you made fun of me for not taking drugs, but you will regret it in the end. Explain to me what Christianity can do for me. Is it phony? Can he love me? I want out of hell. Like in all these cases, I'm sure there's someone out there denies, oh, he didn't write that, he didn't. There are also, some of us can remember when the 700 Club was on late at night, and they would have callers on the lines taking calls from various people. And they have also reported in the mid to late 70s getting many calls from John Lennon along the same line. You see? Even the writer of that anthem saw his need for God. It is a need that we all have, regardless of how much money we have and where we've been and how many people applaud us. God created us for himself. And our hearts are restless until we rest in him. I told you before, when I said there's no standard to live by without God, I stated that there are hard questions to answer. And there are questions that don't lead to easy answers, maybe answers we can't ever figure out in this life. And often it is suffering that is appealed to. If there is a good God, why is this the case? And indeed, there were quite a few people who went into the concentration camps of World War II, Jews taken there by the Nazis, who went in believers, who came out atheists. How can there be a God in the midst of this suffering? And Elie Wiesel, in his book Night, told the story of how one night the Nazis' guards hanged a young boy. And they were all forced to watch as this boy was hanging on the gallows. And he said in his heart, "There is God upon these gallows." Talking about how his faith in God perished. Why does God allow this to happen? But there were also people about the same amount that went into those concentration camps, atheists, who became believers. Because they realized in that ordeal that they could only survive with God. And you know, think about that statement. God is upon that gallows. When that innocent child died, his faith could not handle it. We serve a God powerful enough to speak our universe into existence, to create all the varied forms of life in all their dimensions, providing everything that they need to live and survive. We serve a God omnipotent, all-powerful, all-knowing. We serve a God who is that. And a God who, in order to save us, hanged upon the gallows. A God who spoke the world into existence and who became flesh and blood like we are, and who died on that tree in a shameful, painful death to save us so that we could live in heaven with him. To take God out of our heart and out of our mind is to remove all good, all hope, and all meaning. You are not going to find it without him. You're not. But with him, life will still be filled with troubles and struggles. But there is purpose. There is hope. There is eternal life. Do you want to begin that journey today? But believing that Jesus died and rose again, turning from your sins, and be baptized for remission of sins as we stand and sing.